Thousands of Australians and millions of people around the world live with epilepsy, yet the cause of the neurological disorder hasn't been well understood. In the 1990s, Laureate Professor Sam Berkovic and his collaborators made a discovery that finally gave answers to some families living with the disease. He's the director of Epilepsy Research Centre at Austin Health, and he's my guest today for Changing Australia. Professor, welcome to Radio National Breakfast.
Thank you, Mel. Good morning.
Let's go back 30 years. What did we know then about epilepsy and what sort of treatment was available?
So it was generally believed to be an acquired disorder. It was thought that a lot of events at birth, like breech birth or delayed labour, were causes of epilepsy, and we now know that that's largely untrue. We had a limited number of anti-seizure medications available. And since then, we've learnt a lot about the causes of epilepsy, which are numerous, and there are many new treatments that have been introduced.
So in 1995, it was you and your collaborators who discovered the first gene for epilepsy. Tell me about that discovery and how that changed how you approached treatment and management of epilepsy.
Well, it was in the era where the genomic revolution was just beginning. We didn't have the Human Genome Project as yet. And we worked up a large family based predominantly in South Australia, but also in other states, where there were sufficient numbers of people with epilepsy that by using the technologies of the time, we could figure out where the gene was. And then with a little bit of luck, a scientist in Germany had already studied that gene and were able to quickly confirm that it was the cause of epilepsy in this particular family. And that, as you've said, was the first gene for epilepsy. It turned out to be what we call an ion channel. And an ion channel is a protein or a complex of proteins that allows iron, salt, sodium, potassium, etc., to go from the outside of the cell to the inside. And this determines how excitable the cell is, and increased excitability is the hallmark of epilepsy. So it kind of made intuitive sense, and we were very excited when this discovery emerged.
It's certainly a huge thing to be able to pinpoint the cause of a condition that someone is experiencing and their families. What does it mean for families to have a bit of an answer about why epilepsy is present in their lives? It must be tricky sometimes to have those conversations to try and explain what the cause of something is and how it's come to be.
Well, it's tricky when you don't know. When you do know, it's less tricky. But it's a fundamental question that sufferers and particularly families and parents want to know. You know, why did their child who was previously healthy yesterday start developing seizures? Why is this? And they look for causes like an accidental fall or something in the diet or whether they got a vaccine. And all of that is largely untrue. And in many cases, we now know that it's programmed into the brain via genetic change, and we're now very skilled at picking these up, and we now know of over 1,000 genes that contribute to epilepsy.
I gather you can have genetic epilepsy without having a family history of it. Can you explain that for me?
Yes, and this was an important new discovery as well, not made by us, but later contributed by us. We call that a de novo mutation or a new mutation. And we know that mutations occur relatively frequently in the sperm and in the egg, a little more in the sperm, particularly in older men, and these changes occur in the so-called germ cells, the cells that go on to form the zygote or embryo, and when these occur, you get a disease in the child that is not present in the parents, and you can see the genetic change in the child, but it is absent in the parents, and that mechanism is very important in many forms of epilepsy, particularly the severe forms of childhood epilepsy.
So interesting. You're listening to Changing Australia on Radio National Breakfast. I'm Melissa Clark, and my guest today is the esteemed neurologist, Professor Sam Berkovic. Sam, on a personal note, your parents were Holocaust survivors who fled from Europe to Australia. I understand neither of them were scientists or doctors, though. So how did they influence your life and lead to you ending up with this remarkable career in medicine?
Yeah, well, they never had the opportunity to study. They were teenagers during the Holocaust, so never had the benefit of a proper education. And it was sort of a typical tragic, well, not so tragic, but typical migrant story, coming here with nothing and working themselves up. And like many migrants, they saw education as a key route for, you know, improvement of the quality of the life of the family and particularly their children. So they certainly encouraged myself and my brother to study, and they were not displeased with me that I decided to go into medicine.
I think this is a common migrant family story, that there's high hopes for the kids that they can make the most of opportunities and head into medicine and law. So I'm sure they're very proud of where you've ended up.
And it's different now, but in my era, the joke was, if you couldn't stand the sight of blood, you did law. Of course, now there are many choices, many good choices.
Now, you've just been announced as the next president of the Australian Academy of Science. That's an amazing role, to be able to have a broad influence on Australia's approach to science. What do you hope to achieve in this role?
Yeah, it's a little scary. I'm stepping into very big shoes of Professor Jagadish, who's done a terrific role. He is a physical scientist in working in nanotechnology, so we're typically, the academy switches from a physical scientist to a biological scientist. And you're right, I've got to represent all aspects of science, which I'll attempt to do, although I clearly do not have the knowledge in all areas, but will rely on the esteemed membership of the academy to help me with this. I think there are a lot of big issues in science. I mean, funding is always an issue. It is dispiriting for me now, it's sort of towards the end of my career, to see very bright young scientists have a 1 in 12 chance of getting a grant. That's the sort of success rate with the current grants with the NH and MRC, about 8%. So that's very dispiriting of young people sort of putting a lot of effort into these grants, and then they don't get funded and we may well lose them to the scientific enterprise. So we always need more funding, and that's, you know, that's a common cry, but, you know, it's a realistic thing that we're losing out, you know, and science is the key to improving the country. That's very clear. Some sort of politicians see science as a cost rather than an investment, and it really is an investment. And we know, you know, good examples of that. You know, the best known is Wi-Fi from Australia, but we need to be putting money into fundamental research, build up the fundamental research base, and have this as a very productive sector and an exciting one where young people are keen to get into it.
Right at the beginning, when you were telling me about the discoveries you made in the 1990s, you made reference to, you know, by luck, there was a German researcher who'd had information about a particular gene, and it was the availability of knowledge that had an unexpected benefit to another area of research. I guess that's just an example of precisely what you're talking about, the need to invest in fundamental research.
And that just happens all the time. That just happens all the time in science. You've got to be aware of what's sort of going on and leverage off the work of others, and that makes great science, and it's exciting to collaborate in that way.
That's your task ahead of you now as the head of the Academy of Science, to make the case.
Yeah, that's one task. The other task that I'm very worried about that, you know, is a challenging thing, and one where I guess the media is going to have a role as well, and that is in misinformation and disinformation. That's a really thorny issue where, you know, all kinds of nonsense is available on the internet, and it seems to get equal weight with sort of orthodox opinion. Mm-hmm. And we've got to get a way of cutting through and making it clear, you know, what is information that's based on data and what is information that is just sort of hearsay.
Professor, sorry there. You've had an extraordinary career, and it sounds like you've still got plenty of work ahead of you in this new role. But thank you very much for joining me on Changing Australia on Radio National Breakfast. I really appreciate it.
Thank you and good morning.
Thank you. Laureate Professor Sam Berkovic. He is an esteemed Australian neurologist and director of the Epilepsy Research Centre at Austin Health. And as you heard us discussing just then, he's the next president of the Australian Academy of Science.